Hey guys, before we get into this episode, I wanted to let you all know that Remy and I actually recorded this episode back in March of 2024. But after recording it, we felt that this topic was better to save for you guys when you're actually in the process of planning for Concert Band Contest. Hope you enjoy it. Hey guys, and welcome to the next episode of Percussion Perspective. I am Kevin.
And I'm Remy.
And today's topic is going to be preparing your percussionist for their state contest performance.
Yeah, you know, this is something that both of us have gone through or are currently going through right now with our programs. And we thought that we would just go ahead and kind of give our opinion and some info for those of you guys that maybe are new to taking percussion to state contest or taking a band to state contest, or just wanted some pointers and some tips. So we're going to get right into it. So the very first thing that you need to think about before you even think about taking your kids to state contest are part assignments, right? And by part assignments, I mean specifically percussion. So who's going to get the snare drum part? Who is going to get the mallet parts, bass drum, auxiliary, things like that? So for my opinion, there are two ideologies that go with this topic with part assignments. There's like an educational ideology, and then there's what I'm going to call like a performance based or almost like a result based. So I'll talk about the educational one first. So the educational ideology would basically be spreading the parts around so that everybody plays a little bit of everything. And this is what I try to do in my day-to-day part assignments with my percussion students. So, you know, you don't want a drummer or a keyboard player. You want a percussionist. You want a well-rounded percussionist that can play every instrument. And so the educational ideology or the educational approach to assigning parts for a contest would be, okay, we're going to play, you know, two or three pieces. So everyone is going to play like a battery instrument, snare drum, bass drum, toms, something like that. You could possibly include timpani in there. Everybody's going to play a mallet instrument on one piece, and then everybody's going to play like an auxiliary or a sound effect type part. And then the performance based would be you only assign your kids to their strengths. So that would be, that's pretty self-explanatory, but if you have a kid that is really great on mallets, then you would just kind of keep them on mallets for everything to get the quote unquote best performance or best result for your state contest. And I think that there are pros and cons to both sides. The educational ideology definitely is better for your students in the long run, but the performance-based ideology is definitely going to yield the best results with the least amount of investment in teaching your percussionist those parts. Everybody knows that each kid sort of gravitates towards one side or the other, whether it be rudimental snare drum type performance or mallet and keyboard type performance. So you're always going to have those students that are a little bit better at one side or the other, but just knowing that there are kind of two ways to assign these parts. So I'm really not here to say which one is better. It just depends how you use your contest to build up your program. A lot of the times I will go with strength just because we're being judged on a performance. And so you want your best kids playing the hard xylophone part and your best kids playing the hard snare drum part. But then I might try to sprinkle in, okay, if this is a really great snare drum player, I'm going to give them this difficult snare drum part on a piece. But then I'm going to give them maybe a less important mallet part on a different piece. Not nearly as difficult, but they're at least getting to build up those skills as well.
Yeah, and you can look at it kind of in the same way of when you are preparing for marching band, you audition for parts because you want that marching show to be the best. So you put your best kids on snare, best kids on tenors, best kids on basses, best kids on marimba one, vibe one, whatever. So it's pretty similar to that. I definitely go 99% of the time with the strength concept of that. So you really don't want to be struggling too much when it comes to preparing for contest, in my opinion. You want to be able to pass out that music and the kids get the part that they're going to learn. Like Remy said, if it's a really hard snare part, you're going to want to put the kid on there that's going to work hard on that snare part. Or if it's a really important mallet part, same thing. If it's a tambourine part, like for instance, we're playing a piece right now with my seventh grade class that has a tambourine part that is crucial for tempo maintenance. So I'm thinking I need to put a kid on there, whether they're really good at snare drum, but they may have like the best tempo maintenance. I might put them on that tambourine part to keep the tempo consistent. So I'd rather use like concert music other than contest or solo and ensemble time or lesson material to really focus on that individual improvement on, let's say, the instrument you may have not put that kid on for a contest piece. I've been there before in the past where I've given a student a chance. Let's say they're middle of the class snare drum player and I want to put them on a snare part on a contest piece, but then I end up, that's not working out or whatever the situation might be, where I have to end up moving them around. And one more thing to think about when you're assigning parts is obviously eligibility. So you're not going to put a kid on a really important part who is failing 18 classes that just won't end up benefiting you. So think about it as the same thing as your marching band tryouts. You know, you're putting the best kids on the best instruments when it comes to that, and then saving their individual improvement time for later on in the year.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with that. And if you're failing 18 classes in middle school, that's impressive.
It happens.
That kind of brings us into our next point. So the next tip I have for preparing your percussionist for state contest would be diagram your setup. And this is mostly for younger kids, middle school bands, but diagram your setup. Once you have your parts assigned, pretty much immediately as you pass them out, you need to have a diagram ready. And we can go into the importance of setup and order of mallet instruments and order and everything in a different episode. But for now, I'm just going to say diagram your setup. That way your students know the expectation every single time. Whenever you're working with full band, they know exactly how to set up for each piece. You know, this is our big setup. And then I go to each station as I get to the next piece. And so making sure that you have a really clear plan for them. So like one of the recommendations I have would be making a chart. There's several online tools, like Lucidchart is one that I have used in the past. It's either Miro or Miro. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's Miro. Both of those are kind of cool, almost like graphic design tools where you can create your own shapes if you're like really, really particular about it and you want to make sure that you get the right shape for the xylophone and the bells and the marimba and all that stuff. Or you could just, you know, use like Microsoft Paint for all I care. But having like a physical representation is really important, a visual for those kids to do. Do you have any thoughts on this, Kevin?
Yeah, and like Remy said, the diagram is great. I have actually never like made any kind of visual representation for my kids. I think maybe one time I used like a really like maybe a Google Doc or something. But most of the time I try to just set the standard that the kids understand. You know, if you're standing back there in the percussion section, timpani goes on the left, you know, then you have bass drum, then you've got your snares, and then you kind of start having the accessories on from there. And I like to put accessories next to the snare that might have close to the same part, or might have, again, one of those tempo keeping instruments next to the snares. And then it just kind of moves on out from there. So if you like kind of having that standard, that same setup for a lot of pieces, your kids can start to kind of memorize that. But I think a diagram is really good if you start to have something that's a little more complicated, or you don't want to have 20 minutes between every piece where the kids have to move. So that's where a diagram can become really useful.
Yeah. And just post that at the back of your band room or whatever, like on the percussion closet door, or if you have like a little percussion cabinet, just like put that up there and say, you know, state contest diagram, or, you know, whatever concert you're preparing for. Because a lot of these tips can just kind of apply for any time you're on a new concert cycle. The last tip I would have here about diagramming your setup, if you put importance on this, so will your students. And so that kind of goes on to something that we've talked about on the last few episodes also. Getting things ingrained in your students early is really important, because like with my high school students, I don't really have to make a diagram for setup. They understand how things need to flow and how things should be set up. And then really the only thing that I go and say to them is like, hey, I would switch those two instruments because the vibes and the bells play together a lot, or the xylophone doesn't need to be on the edge of the setup because then that's all the audience is going to hear. Something, you know, something along those lines. But like I said, if you make it important, your students will think it's important also, and they'll start thinking about that. So that's just going to make your life easier going on as they get older.
Yeah. And we're going to move on to our next topic. But before I do that, I would like to apologize if you hear either of my two yippy dogs barking in the background.
Puppies.
They like to scream at everything. So, all right, our next topic is going to be making your percussionists have a crucial part in your band's warm-up routine. I think this is a hard thing to do because a lot of times you're focusing on band sound and you don't want to hear a snare drum, you don't want to hear a bass drum, you don't want to hear a bunch of accessories as a band director. So this can be a hard thing to do, but it can be as simple as having your percussionist play scales. So if you do scales as part of your warm-up, you need to have the percussionist doing that on their mallet instruments. And it's also a really hard thing for percussionists to get excited about. So, but if you make it part of the routine and, you know, stress the importance of that. And again, I think if you stress that as a young percussionist, when they're in sixth grade, then it becomes part of their routine. But having the percussionist playing scales with your band is something that is really crucial for them. So you could also have some kind of, you know, a battery warm-up routine, something from a method book or something that is created for the kids. You know, if you have a set warm-up that you do every day, then have some kind of percussion part that goes with it, whether you try to find a percussionist to write something, or you have a method book or something like that, get it. You can also try to get it custom tailored to your band's warmups, something where they don't just sit back there for the first 15 minutes of class and, you know, get into trouble. Cause as soon as they get bored, they're going to start throwing stuff at each other and getting on their phones and whatever it is that they're going to start doing. So that's not a good way to keep them occupied. So another thing you can do is just have them play warmups on whatever accessories that they're going to start playing. You know, you can, if you've got a kid that has a part in one of your pieces that they struggle with, or that is, you know, a difficult rhythm, have them play that rhythm while your band is doing some kind of warmup. Just anything that's going to get them playing is better than doing nothing. And while you're doing those warmups, it's pretty important to have them rotate. So don't just have the same kids warming up on everything every day, or on the same thing every day, I should say. You're again trying to build a percussionist, a well-rounded percussionist. So having them move around a lot, even if a kid is sitting there playing the warm-up on a tambourine or a triangle or whatever you've got, it gets them playing, and playing is better than doing nothing in class. So if possible, what I like to do, I especially do this in my sixth grade, seventh grade, and a lot of the times the eighth grade, is if you have a percussion director, or even if you have a really trustworthy older student that you can kind of put in charge of this. And again, I'm not saying you should send kids away without, you know, supervision, but if you have a way you can, well, you know, if you want to keep your band hall from burning down,
yeah,
I would definitely have some kind of adult supervision. But if you can trust them, get them in a place where they can go through any kind of percussion specific warm-up, whether they just, you know, obviously good aid on hand, and we're not going to sit here and talk about warmups, but it's not that hard to get them on pads. You know, every percussionist should have their own practice pad that goes to school with them. So they should be able to have a good 10, 15 minute warmup where they learn something new, or they're working on a certain skill that they have. So any type of warmup is important for them. If every day those kids know that they can show up to class and they're going to have 15 minutes of downtime at the beginning, is not going to get them excited for class.
Yeah. If you're thinking like, how does this relate to state contest? So like you go through a warm up at state contest, right? And if you're super stressed out about like, okay, we got here and now we're trying to load in and all this stuff. And we're in the warm up room and the percussion is just like running around the back of the room while I'm trying to tune the winds or I'm trying to do lip slurs or long tones or whatever, that like, that's going to be really frustrating in that moment. And it's also going to be harder for your percussion students to stay engaged. They're going to be in the back of the room screwing around, right? Instead of, you know, if you had this routine, like Kevin said, doesn't have to be like, it's not rocket science. If they just play some basic exercises, play some scales and arpeggios, like, you know, the foundations book is not super great specifically for percussion, but all of those scale patterns in there, like those are great to play on keyboard. So they can play those with you. But like I said, you're at state contest and there's going to be a huge difference between the success of your performance if your percussion is engaged in a warm up with you beforehand or not. It just kind of gets their mindset going in the right place. And then like Kevin said, if you have a percussion director, like they can take them, you know, I end up taking my percussion kids, even if it's a full band day, I will take them for the first 15 minutes and we'll work on, you know, fundamentals and a couple exercises and maybe like a new rhythm or a new skill for just a bit. But as we get close to contest, that's just kind of a waste of time. And so it's like, you guys just need to focus on this music for the next, you know, week or 10 days or whatever out from a contest. So they need to have some sort of ritual that they go through with the band so that they're not just standing there. That's why percussionists get that stereotype of like, you know, messing around, being irresponsible, being distracting, blah, 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 is because they just simply don't have things to do. Like they're not stimulated 100% of the time like the winds are. So anything you can do to help that is going to help the success of your performance for contest. Cool. Number four is sectionals. So in my schedule, my weekly schedule for my percussion, I have sectionals. And this is like different than pulling them. Like you would say that's different from pulling them out for like a warm up, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
for sure.
So a sectional would just be having a sectional on that concert music that you have programmed for your contest. So Modern Wind Band Lit often utilizes the percussion section as its own ensemble. And that's where these sectionals become really important. It's really difficult to put a challenging, you know, wind band piece together when you kind of have these two ensembles, your winds and then your percussion. If they don't each individually know their parts, it's even harder to put them together. So pull these kids out, you know, have a percussion director work with them, or if you have just another band director that you could split, you know, kind of divide and conquer, split up the ensemble for a little while. And I realize that's hard sometimes if you only have one band room. There, you know, there's different ways you could do it. I'll let you figure that out for yourself because that's, you know, that's not our job here. That's not what we're trying to accomplish. But
this if podcast you can get... is really for telling them how to do their job exactly.
Oh, okay. All right.
So we should probably restart the whole thing. Yeah. And our band program is pretty much set up like this, where anytime we're beginning any new music, whether it's just for a concert or just for a contest, it's pretty much my job as a percussion teacher. I try to get the parts taught to the kids in a way that when they go into rehearsal, almost for the first, second, third time, they can play their music. I feel like that's the benefit of having a percussionist on staff is they can utilize time to make sure the kids can get their music learned.
Yeah, and also, it just helps keep the kids like feel involved and engaged too.
I feel like if I can get music taught to them, or at least I can get them through their concert music, I can then maybe use some of that time to learn something new, whether it's like learn a new rudiment or learn to play something faster or something. Cause that's always more fun for a percussionist. Most of the time is like they want to learn like a new concept, or they want to be able to play something cool, whether it's you just pass out like a cool snare solo and they learn it. So, you know, obviously the contest music is very important, but if you can get through that, you can also utilize that time in a fun way.
Yeah. And it also depends on the piece too, I would say. Like if you're playing, like we just played three pieces for a contest this last week, and two of them were really percussion heavy. And so for the first, you know, few weeks of this concert cycle, we hit that in sectionals on Mondays, but we played this other piece that was like, I'm not going to say the name of the piece because I don't know like rules about that. And there are probably no rules, but anyway, I don't want to buzz market anybody, you know? So anyway,
was it Lincolnshire Posey?
Salvation is Created. Actually, that's a really good example. Salvation is Created. Fantastic piece. The percussion parts are basically non-existent. Like there, I think there's like timpani and suspended cymbal, and they have like a few crescendos and that's it, you know? Like, so if you like, be smart about it. You don't have to do a sectional on a piece that has like very minimal percussion. Usually older pieces. Modern pieces are a lot better just because percussion is such a young art form that we're really only now beginning to see over maybe the last couple decades, like legitimate percussion parts. I know I've played, and Kevin probably has played too, a lot of music that's like, you know, fantastic music, but the percussion parts are nothing to write home about. So
one thing about that, if you do have a part, you know, where like maybe your wind ensemble where you only put two kids on it because it's really minimal, but you do want to make the important note that like that suspended cymbal roll better be good, or that crash cymbal crash better be good, or that timpani roll better be good. Like, so yeah. you can do a little bit of a deep dive on those kids on like, hey, really make sure you're choosing the right cymbal for this, or your speed of your timpani roll is good. Like don't downplay
those things.
Yeah. Like let those kids understand that even though that part is not incredibly fun, it can be impactful for the piece.
Yeah. It was written for a reason. But yeah, have sectionals with your percussionist. It'll help. Cool. Number five, run the full program several times leading up to the contest. Hopefully you're doing this anyways, right? This is a good practice just all around for like the endurance of your wind players. But logistically, it's really important for your percussionist. So this kind of goes back to like what number two was, where we're talking about diagramming your setup. So running your full program helps them understand the flow between pieces and how to change pieces quickly and quietly. Like, and then it also will expose setup problems. So if you have a problem with your setup, and you start running this, like, you know, piece one, then piece two, then piece three, it's like, oh, we have to drag the chimes all the way across the ensemble in between the second and third piece. And like, that's not super graceful, you know? So it might expose problems in your setup, and you can kind of go back in and tweak that and say, hey, if we actually swap these two instruments, it will give you enough time, or it'll get those chimes closer to you so that in your four measures of rest, you can walk from the bells to the chimes, play your chime part, and then walk back to the bells, something like that. But yeah, run the program several times leading up to that contest, and that will help your percussionists a ton.
Yeah, and adding one quick thing to that, we've always been at a concert, and the timpani player, especially at a middle school concert or contest, where the band director is kind of standing there in between pieces, and everyone's just looking at the timpani player because they have to practice, or the
bow 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 bow.
Right. I mean, yeah, they're tuning, so. Please, if you have a timpani player who isn't the fastest at tuning, and you're not going to have a seventh grader sometimes that is very fast, but they need to practice that. That needs to be something where they can get those drums tuned in a way that doesn't cause 5 to 10 minute little awkward intermissions between your pieces. So anything you can do to get your timpani players to be able to tune quickly is important. I always try to tell my kids, hey, you know, the kid before you is going to be tuned to blah, 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 and you only have to adjust this drum a little bit down or this one up or something like that. Or if you only have one kid using like two drums on one piece and the other kid's using three on the other, have them go ahead and tune that third drum that they're not using. And then, you know, they're only making a few adjustments. So just, yeah, that's going to end up being one of the longest transitional things that has to happen once you get your setup, you know, really good.
Cool. So that brings us to our next one, which is assign sight reading roles and stick to them. So this goes back to the educational versus performance mindset and how, you know, I think both of us sort of lean towards the performance mindset, just because, you know, you're preparing for a contest. You want your best players on the hardest parts and things. But I do try to spread it around a little bit. You know, you don't want the same kid playing snare drum on all three tunes. Like, that's silly. But in sight reading, you're absolutely going for the best performance possible, right? Like, that's literally what you're being judged on. So put your kids on their strengths. If you've got a hotshot snare drum player, put him on, as long as he can read, right? Like, he can play real fast, but if he can't read music, that doesn't matter. So put your best snare drum kid on snare drum, put your best mallet reader on the mallet part. If you've got, you know, a kid that has really, really great time, maybe put them on bass drum, just, you know, to steady everything. So put those kids on their strengths.
Yeah. In my experience, I mean, we are literally in the thick of this right now. And we have figured out it sometimes is more important to pick the kid that is extremely aware of what's happening around them on something that is loud and that is tempo maintenance heavy. Like, if you have a kid that can play really well, but they can't get their eyes off their music and they can't look at a director and be able to adjust what they're playing. Cause I've had those kids before where they're really good players, but they like only play exactly what's on the page and they can never adjust. And so you want to be able to have a kid that can look up every measure and be like, oh, I am on beat two. And that director just showed me the downbeat and they need to be able to adjust on the spot. So when it comes to assigning kids, I'll try out a few different variations. You know, not like, I'm not going to be like, hey, you're my last chair kid. Let's try you out on snare. I mean, you could, but that's probably going to be a waste of a sight reading, cause we may only practice sight reading 10 times before we right. do it. So you want to get it right. So, I'll do a few different variations to see what's going to fit the best. And then after a few times, I pretty much know like, this is probably going to work out the best. And like Remy said, I stick to it. So it's important to figure that out on the sooner side so that you can, you know, be able to have those kids getting comfortable on what they're going to play and being able to practice looking up and stuff like that. And this is kind of one quick tip on sight reading when you're having the prep time. And I don't know how the prep time is in other states, but in Oklahoma, we have 8 minutes of prep time, and this is with middle school kids. So I always have like my keyboard players are touching the notes with their fingers. They don't even need the mallets in their hands until they're about to play. That's going to get them, you know, hopefully at the highest percentage of correct notes as possible. And then I also always stress to them to count, especially that snare drummer and that bass drummer, like anybody that has a tempo maintenance instrument, I make sure that they count really strong. Even if the band is using air, you know, if they're air playing or something, I still always have those percussionists count. It's going to be impressive to the judge and it's going to drill those rhythms that those kids are going to need to sight read on the spot. So that's just a few sight reading tips there.
Yeah, good tips. And to go back, you're talking about a kid that's with it, right? You know, to go back to episode one. Another way you could say is like a kid with high musical IQ, someone that is aware, like Kevin said, like, oh, I'm on beat two, but I just saw the conductor give a downbeat. Like, there aren't a lot of kids that can like, especially middle school, like a lot of these tips go with middle school kids because again, hopefully if you're doing this with your younger kids, it kind of becomes automatic with the high school. Now with high school, you should still assign these roles, but hopefully a high school kid is going to be able to look up and recognize that. But yeah, high musical IQ for sure. There's one more point here. Build up sight reading, for those other kids, you know, the kid that you're not going to put on mallets because they aren't the best sight reader on mallets. Use the rest of the year to build that up, right? That doesn't mean that like, oh, well, this kid's not going to be my sight reader at contest, which contests should, you know, people put a lot of importance on it, but it's a small percentage of your year. So if you're spending your entire year, you know, for like that little month and a half, 2 month section of your year, like that's probably not the best educational, or that's probably not the best educationally for your students. So use the rest of the year to build up, you know, those other students on their weaker instruments. Cool. The last one is make an equipment list. And this is probably like the last thing that you'll do before you, you know, head out the door to contest. Not literally right before you head out the door. That would be bad. But
yeah, this is probably the last 5 minutes before.
5 minutes before. Be like, oh, guys, we need 30 things. So make an equipment list. Make sure each student understands like their role, their responsibility. Like, hey, when we get there, you are going to grab this thing and you're going to walk it in. You're going to push this auxiliary cart. You're going to grab the crash cymbal stand, whatever. Make sure each kid understands what is expected of them. And that's going to minimize, you know, the risk of forgetting something or losing something. Like every time we host a lot of these contests at my current school, because we have really nice facilities, luckily. And it's like every time we host a contest, it seems like we like gain a snare drum stand or gain a cymbal stand. And obviously I try to get those back to those people, but sometimes they're not labeled. So it's just like, well, yay for us.
That's how we got our five octave.
You have a five octave marimba. You weren't like, hey, who left this here?
Yeah, no. Yeah. I just grabbed a Sharpie, wrote my high school name right on it.
Nice. So just yeah, kidding. You know, make a list of what you need, and you know, it doesn't have to be anything fancy, but I use Google Sheets all the time. So another tip here on kind of your equipment is have the percussion pack up for your contest, you know, before you leave on this trip. Have them pack up right after a full run of your program. So say you're going to leave like Friday morning or whatever, have them pack up Thursday after class. That way everything is out. Like you just did a run of your program. So everything that they need for all three pieces or however many pieces you're playing is out and set up. And it's just like, okay, we need to pack all this up instead of, you know, relying on each kid to then walk into a storage room and hopefully grab everything they need. If the whole program is just set up, you know, their whole diagram is set up the way it's supposed to be, it's a lot easier to keep track of like, oh, we've got everything, but there's still a suspended cymbal set up over there. So we need to make sure we grab that.
Yeah. And that's a pretty surefire way of just making sure you don't forget anything. I didn't do this for a while, and probably the last 5-6 years or so ago, I just started getting all the cases we were going to use. I just set them up behind the kids and I just go, hey, there's your case. As soon as we're done, you're popping that thing in the case and leaving it exactly where we found it. Just so that, yeah, the next morning they can just grab it. Another thing about contests, just make sure it is your job, whether you're the percussion teacher or you're the band director, make sure the contest host is going to have what you need, large instrument wise. You don't want to show up there and you need, you know, a gong or whatever. Most of the time it's okay, but there's been a few times where like we've shown up somewhere and I didn't communicate with them that I needed a gong or chimes or something. And they were thinking, oh, this is a middle school band. We probably don't need chimes or a gong or something like that. So just be communicative to the hosts about what you're going to need.
Cool. Yeah. Hopefully you guys found these tips useful, and hopefully this is something that you can go back to when you are starting to prepare your kids for state contest. And, you know, as always, questions and comments are welcome. And thank you guys for listening today. You got anything else, dude?
That's it. Hope you guys continue to listen, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Later, guys.